Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me in just a moment from North America is my usual partner, Jeff Rimebold of Sky Sports. I'm here in Dearborn, Michigan, home of the Detroit Lions. I'm heading off to their camp later today. So we are recording a shorter podcast this week because we know the sound quality isn't great. We've cobbled something together for you. But Jeff, we've got to meet up and have our chat. We can't go without our Inside the Huddle fix, can we?
Not a chance, man. I tell you what, this shows the dedication that you have and that the NFL UK and Sky Sports have just to bring this to the listeners each week from some pretty amazing technical challenges. But you sound like Edward R. Murrow this morning.
It's easy for me. I'm just laying in my hotel room. It's Nick Pike who's got the stressful job, our producer, trying to get all this together this week. We're going to talk a little bit about news around the NFL. We won't go into our top five positions this week, but we will get back to that next week. Of course, training camps across the U.S. have opened up, so I'll be chipping in with a few reports from Dallas. I've visited Dallas, San Francisco, and Kansas City. I'm off to the Lions and the Bills a little bit later in the week. But Jeff, let's start with the big news that Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner have signed big deals with the Seattle Seahawks. Wilson was 4 years, $87.6 million. The big thing with that, I think, is 61 of that was guaranteed. And Bobby Wagner was 4 years, $43 million. They're locking up their core players, but Cam Chancellor is holding out.
Yeah, you know what? And it's interesting because you hear Richard Sherman come to Cam's defense and really – basically negotiating for him through the media about why, you know, you go. His direct quote, as I read it, was as you go down the list of guys at his position who are making more money than he is, that he's every bit as good a player or a better player. So, you know, I think it's the interest. This is really, Neil, an indication of what happens when you get successful and players play at a high level. They expect to be paid like guys around the league are getting paid. That's why it's so difficult to keep a team together and have, you know, quote, a dynasty. Anytime one guy gets paid, that's less money in the cap for the other guys. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can pay anybody else, you know, anymore, frankly, or whether Chancellor ends up, you know, not playing.
I was reading an interesting article this morning talking about potential collateral damage. You know, Michael Bennett is someone we've talked about on this podcast before. He is in camp, but he isn't happy with his deal. Brandon Mebane is looking for a new deal. I think Russell Okung is looking for an extension as well. So, as Bobby Wagner actually tweeted out, Jeff, before he signed his deal, you can't keep them all. I mean, that's just the nature of it. There's a business element to this game, which is why we have competitive balance.
Yeah, you can't keep them all, and you can't keep them all happy. And, you know, I think, you know, Pete is frustrated, and he talked about, you know, they had to cut a guy, one of their top defensive linemen this week because of cap issues, and he just described it as this sucks. He said this is the part of the business that he doesn't like, and the fact that, you know, how do you keep them all happy? Now, Michael Bennett's making his $7 million, and, you know, Bobby's now making more money, and you know, Michael's unhappy with his contract. You know, they've got some work to do in Seattle, and I think it'll be interesting to watch and see how they piece together their football team and hold together the core of their football team. And it was interesting, Russell Wilson's comment, that he hoped that his contract wasn't going to fraction, you know, divide the Seahawks locker room, because, you know, everybody in this day and age, everybody knows what everybody makes, you know, it's a tough situation.
Yeah, that's very, very honorable of Russell Wilson. Of course, he said it after he got the $61 million guaranteed in the bank. Jeff, another part of the business, of course, is injuries. And I hate to see these in the preseason because it feels like, you know, it's over for the player before it even gets started. And I saw that Ravens safety Matt Elam is out for the year with a biceps tear. And, this was a first-round pick in 2013. Has never really lived up to the potential. This was a make-or-break year, really, I felt, for Matt Elam. I've seen Starla Tulele carried off, carted off the field in Carolina with a stress reaction to a foot he injured in the playoffs. I mean, these are the things that you... you have to roll with as coaches. And you know, I spoke to Andy Reid yesterday. I've spoken to Jim Tomsula. And it is that next man up philosophy is rife across the NFL. It's like Andy Reid said yesterday, there are too many good players in this league for us to sort of mope about. If we lose somebody, you just go to the next guy. That's just the way it is. It's the same with coaches. It's the same with anyone in this business.
Well, that's the front that you have to put up, and it's the reality that we live with day to day in this business. But gosh, you hate to see guys hurt in training camp. And you talked about Elam and how it's been a frustrating career for him and being replaced last year in Baltimore. And from all the reports that I had heard out of Baltimore's camp, he was in shape and really, really, you know, looked good in OTAs and the off-season work, and then to tear a bicep and lose the whole season. It's got to be frustrating, not only for Elam, but for the Baltimore organization. So, but it's the reality of the business, and we'll have more of them in training camp. It's that delicate balance, Neil, as you watch around, as you go around to the training camps, where, you know, they have to get enough work, they have to get enough hitting, they have to get enough time on the field to get ready to play games. But every time you go out, this is not other sports. You know, this isn't tennis or basketball or soccer or any of those sports that, you know, are not as tough on your bodies. This game is hard on your body, and you know, it, as coaches, you just hold your breath, you know, every time you go out on the field, because guys are at risk, and it's the nature of the business.
And Jeff, you won't be surprised to see the occasional skirmish in training camp. There was Tom Coughlin was unhappy that the Giants had one yesterday, but they are part of what happens in football when you're going against the same guys day after day. But I missed the Dez Bryant one by a day. I was down with the Cowboys on the Saturday. On the Sunday, Dez got into it with Tyler Patman, the defensive back of the Cowboys, and it continued on the sidelines as well, with Dez kind of jumping over some people and slapping Patman on the head. Is this anything that Cowboys fans should be worried about? Is anything the Cowboys should be worried about? Is Dez a ticking bomb, or is this just football?
Well, I think there's a little of both in that. I think that a lot of it is football, and it's training camp football, and it's, as you mentioned, Neil, you know, these guys are under pressure. They have extremely long days. They're tired. Their bodies are tired. Their tempers get short. They're tired of the monotony of training camp already, I'm certain. And then a little bit of it is what comes with Dez. He's a very high-spirited guy. He's got a short fuse, and we've seen evidence of, you know, him losing his composure and losing his temper, and you know, it's part of what some of the baggage that you get when you get a guy like Dez Bryant. But it also comes with the other stuff too, the great catches and the tremendous play on the field. So you just have to try and manage it as best you can. Most of the time, in those kinds of circumstances, you know, the coaches address it in meetings and talk about the danger. What you're concerned about more than anything else is the danger of, say, for example, when he jumped over those guys and slapped Patman on the head. You know, if he hits him on the helmet and breaks a hand, you know, how stupid is that? You know, now we lose our best player, a guy we just paid a whole ton of money to, because he can't control his temper. So as coaches, you don't want to see it. You recognize it as part of the deal, but, you know, certainly you don't want to lose a guy in a, you know, one of those training camp dust-ups. I had a coach that one time handled it the best I've ever seen. He'd let you go at it until you were so exhausted you couldn't throw another punch, and then he'd walk over and he'd just kind of saunter up and he'd go, "That was the worst fight I've ever seen." that guy was Jack Picknell, who later went on to be the head coach of the Scottish Claymores and the Barcelona Dragons in NFL Europe. And I thought that was the best way to handle it, because you'd be standing there, you can't hardly breathe, you're panting like a lizard, you can't even pick your hands up. And he says, "That's the worst fight I've ever seen."
Jeff, I'll tell you what Dez is, though, now. He is the most watched man on that Dallas Cowboys team. I was out at camp, and they had about 4,000 fans there, and Romo gets a huge cheer when he runs onto the field, and Jason Witten got a huge cheer. You'd have loved it. The offensive linemen marched out in groups of five. So there's the five. Here comes the best offensive line in the NFL. They're all marching together, and then the twos are behind them, and then there's a couple of free agents at the back. But Dez came running out, and people were screaming. I mean, it was bedlam. I mean, they were going crazy. After the practice, he's got about 30 or 40 reporters around him. This is just a regular training camp day. Nothing had happened that remarkable on the day I was there. And I was talking to one of the PR guys of the Cowboys while we were looking at Dez surrounded by people, and he said he's the biggest superstar we've had since Emmitt Smith. And they've had some good players in that team.
Yeah, and you know, he has become, interestingly enough, he has become really the face of that team. And that's amazing when he can take that leap over Romo and take that leap over Witten and take that leap over all those great players that they have with the Cowboys. But he has captured captured the imagination of Cowboy Nation. And, you know, I think his holdout, the fact that he's making so much money, the unbelievable plays that the guy is capable of on the field. And now if they can just, and I'm sure that the Cowboy, you know, hierarchy hold their breath every evening that, you know, let's just get us, Dez, just get through one more day.
Yeah, I get that impression. I mean, I think, like you said, all that other stuff is great, but I just feel like there's volatility that's not going anywhere anytime soon with Dez Bryant. So Jeff, I started out with the Cowboys. I've been to the 49ers and then the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's get the hellos out of the way first. So Jason Garrett says to say hello to you. Cole Beasley says to say hello to you. And Jim Tomsula says to say hello. I feel like I'm the messenger boy. I'm just going around collecting hellos for you.
That's awful nice of those guys. You know, they're all great guys. Tell me something now. What I'm really anxious to hear, and I need to get my football fix on, how do you compare the practices at the three places that you've been?
So Dallas was... Dallas and Kansas City were pretty. I didn't see 49ers practice. I just met Jimmy for breakfast and a coffee. So the players were off. They'd been scrimmaging the night before. So I didn't see the Niners. I would actually say Dallas was just a good paced training camp session. They were both in pads, which I was glad about because you can really see a lot more when they're in pads. I thought that the Cowboys were more intense in the work they were doing with their offensive line and defensive line. They made a big point of, you know, doing a lot of that stuff. I call it when they're in the pit and everyone's circled around them and watching, baying for blood and stuff. I mean, I love that. They were doing that for an extended period of time. But I thought the Chiefs actually did a little bit more hitting. Not all the way to the ground, but they were pretty physical. And again, the Chiefs had a sort of good tempo to their practice, and they were Andy Reid sort of told me afterwards they don't condition their players, Jeff, after practice, so they don't make them run sprints. But you better sprint everywhere you're going on the field when you're on there. So if you catch a pass, you better sprint it to the end zone, and then you better sprint back to the sideline. They do all of their conditioning within the practice. I mean, is that something that's becoming, you know, something that, you know, coaches adopt that approach?
I know back, you know, even going back to Coach Vermeil's training camps, very little. You have visions of back in the Lombardi days where they opened up downs and they would run gassers at the end of practice and all of that. I think that's changed now. I think the coaches realize and all the people that they have working in the conditioning area that the best conditioner for football is football. And so when a player, and I think, Neil, one of the things I really wish that you could bring back with you to show the viewers and the fans in the UK is just the tempo that they practice, how fast practice is, and how they go from one drill to another and one play to the next, and the players go. I can remember Priest Holmes, and I've used this as a lesson to all the young kids that I've coached since that time. Priest Holmes had just come over in a Plan B deal from Baltimore, and you know, he would go on and that very season lead the NFL in touchdowns and set a Chief record in touchdowns. But I remember an inside run every time he carried the ball, whether it was coming out from the 20-yard line going out or from the 20-yard line going in, he would always finish in the end zone. So he'd run a play, and the defense would butt him up because, as you know, they don't take each other to the ground. Mm. But he'd bounce off the defensive players and then sprint until his feet were in the end zone. And I thought it was interesting that, and certainly not a coincidence, that he would go on and lead the NFL in touchdowns scored that year. So I think that is the, you know, really become the norm now in training camps. There's still a few people that hang on to the, you know, the gasser mode at the end of practice, but if you're practicing well, you really don't need the condition anymore.
No. Jeff, I'll tell you a couple of players that stood out for me yesterday at the Chiefs, and then maybe I'll just, you know, give you an update on the British players in Dallas. But actually, before I tell you about a couple of players who caught my eye in Kansas City, the whole operation, Jeff, of a training camp is incredible. I mean, just incredible. The amount of people that work around the team. So there's 90 players on the field in St. Joseph, Missouri, so about an hour south of Kansas City. And a storm rolls in. So, you know, the weather in the Midwest can get pretty hairy at times, so they don't mess about. They were like, no, we get tornadoes and things around here. We're gonna get inside. So literally, the horn goes, they clear the area. We all have to get off the field as well. And by the time we'd walked up to the field house, they had a field house that was indoors at this Missouri Western University. The players were inside. They had already carried on with their group install. They were installing new plays. By the time we'd walked up there, the down markers were up there. All of the cones, the water bottles, all of the footballs. I mean, everything was just... And I was like, how the heck did that all get up there that quickly? I mean, I can... You know, 90 players don't move very quick, but they did it when Andy Reid blew his whistle, you know. But getting all the other stuff up there, it just goes to show that it's more than just the players on the field. There is an entire production here going on.
Well, it's incredible. And when you take your camp on the road like the Chiefs do, you've got to pack up everything. And I mean everything. Photocopiers, everything. And it all goes, and it's all got to be set up and reset up and taken down and moved. And, you know, the logistics of training camp are incredible. And again, just so the listeners kind of get a feel for this, in the evening when the coaches get together, and I mean everything is talked about in terms of what's going to go on the next day, which drills are going to be run, what part of the field, what field you're going to use, because usually you have multiple fields at training camp, who's going to move to whom, all, you know, the equipment guys, what bags, have to know what bags are going to be where, what cones are going to be where, when you need this, when you need that. And it's down to, you know, it's not 5-minute blocks anymore. We used to do it in 5-minute blocks, but at 9 o'clock practice starts, 9:10 stretching's over, 9:05 whatever. But now it's down to the minute. When you see those schedules in training camp, it may be 9:58 inside run begins, 10:04 Skelly and one-on-one pass rush. So it is really a lot of logistics and a lot of organizational work and a lot of guys behind the scenes do an awful lot so that those players can practice at a high level.
Jeff, the man who caught my eye the most yesterday with the Chiefs, and he makes some outlandish statements. He's just compared himself to being the LeBron James of the NFL. But Jamaal Charles, you watch Jamaal Charles in the flesh. It's incredible. I tell you how he runs, Jeff. He runs like, he reminded me like he was skiing. He reminded me because he was like weaving from side to side. His body, everything sort of just flows. There's no sharp cuts. It's just a weaving. And he's, you know, you always say, you know, you shouldn't run too high. But this guy, I don't know how people tackle him, how people get under his pads, because he runs so low. So he's almost like when you see one of those downhill skiers and they turn and they're almost, you know, parallel to the ground. I mean, it's just incredible to see.
He's got incredible body control, and the thing that is impressive to me, Neil, is that when he's doing those things, he's doing them extremely fast. I mean, it's not like he has to, you know, lose speed to get in and out of a cut or to move his body. He is a tremendous, tremendous talent.
And Jeff, this is a team I think with growing talent. They had a lot of injuries last year, but I'll just, you know, just to name a few. Albert Wilson was a receiver who stepped up late last year, and obviously they've added Jeremy Maclin. You still got Niall Davis and Cyrus Gray coming out of the backfield, look really good. All those backs are going to be involved in the passing game. I think there was more of an effort to throw the football down, something that we've both been frustrated about with the Chiefs in the past. Now, there were mixed results yesterday in camp, but there's definitely that feeling that Wilson is going to stretch the field, Maclin is going to stretch the field. I was surprised how big Justin Houston was in the flesh. I think he looks like a defensive end. He doesn't look like an outside linebacker. Very thick set player, and very ambitious player. We chatted afterwards, and I interviewed him, and you know he's basically all in for the Super Bowl. And the other one who caught my eye was Marcus Peters, their rookie first round corner. He had two picks of Alex Smith during their team drills, and we know that Alex Smith likes to take care of the football, so that probably hurt Alex. But this is a talented team, Jeff, these Chiefs.
Yeah, it is. You know, and you got the Black Mamba there, and you know, here's the one I wanted to ask you about. Really was curious. Eric Berry, how much work is he getting in training camp, Neil, and how does he look?
He looks good. He's definitely being limited. So I was watching that, and they had Hussein Abdullah playing a lot more safety than Eric Berry. So he's, you know, when they were in team and they were in the team, you know, team stuff, and it was full contact as it's going to be. He was kind of in every sort of third play. So he's not at the stage where he's out there directing traffic and doing all of it. And the Chiefs have been very careful to sort of monitor how much stuff he has to do outside of the football, because there's so much there's so much attention on him now. But he's another one. I thought he looked in great shape. He just looked like a tremendous athlete. So he's obviously been working like crazy. But yeah, they're being careful with him for now.
Good. You know what? He's one of those guys that I'm pulling for. You know, particularly as a cancer survivor myself, anytime a guy comes back from lymphoma cancer and has a chance to play in the NFL again, I think it's an amazing story. And I like a lot of people are really pulling for Eric Berry.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jeff, you know our old friend Jim Tomsula, he's in a determined mood. I mean, I think he's a tiny bit, although he sort of says all the right things, I think he's a tiny bit frustrated that it's been an off season of woe from the outside. But you know, and this is what you want to hear from your coach. Jimmy's been, well, I'm concerned about what's inside this building. And it was funny because he said, you know, this is Jimmy, just doesn't really put on any airs or graces or anything like that. He said, you know, I know I wasn't the most popular choice in America. I get that. But, you know, I have my friends and family who believe in me. My players believe in me. That's good enough for me. You know, he's in a determined mood, though, I think.
The media couldn't done Jimmy Tomsula any more favors than take shots at him, because you know and I know how he is, and he will circle the wagons, and he will have that team extremely tight, and he will have them all going in the same direction. And I think that's, you know, the word I heard out of San Francisco, and I was curious to hear whether you felt the same, was that the players were happy that Jimmy was the same Jimmy that was the defensive line coach. He's not changed since he's got the head coaching position, and he's going to be himself. And I think that's, you know, certainly that's what Jimmy has to do. And, you know, I know that those 49ers will be competitive. I know they'll be tough. I know they'll play smart. You know, they'll do all the things that you know, Jimmy can do to help them. I just hope they're going to be talented enough to compete in a really tough division.
He's the same Jimmy. He was sitting there with his little spitting cup while we were doing the interview, spitting away. But Jeff, he showed me, he talked about a piece of video from their scrimmage the night before, and Lawrence Okoye, the British defensive tackle, of course, the ex-Olympian, discus thrower, he chased down and was closing on Colin Kaepernick when they blew the whistle. He said, it's a 320-pound man catching Colin Kaepernick. It was incredible. You know, the Brits are making some noise, Jeff. I'll just go back to Dallas. And Jack Crawford he plays with a relentlessness. He's really, really aggressive. Now, F.A. Obada is obviously pretty raw, but in one-on-ones, twice he did a really nice spin move and got into the backfield and would have had a sack. And I spoke to Rod Marinelli afterwards about both guys, and yeah, especially with Jack Crawford, Rod Marinelli's face kind of lit up, and I thought about that afterwards. I thought, Rod Marinelli is a really good coach for them, because he kind of has a simple message, but he kind of repeats it over and over. I mean, and this is a coach who's got tremendous experience, isn't it, Jeff?
Absolutely. And, you know, when he was – I remember Rod when he was the D-line coach at Tampa Bay, and he had Warren Sapp and all those great players. And watching him on the practice field with his D-linemen was really fun. He is a no-nonsense, ex-Marine, tough guy, and his players are going to play up the field. They're not, like you say, it's a simple message. Get up the field. Get after the quarterback. And I'm really excited to see the impact that those UK players, those British kids, are making in the National Football League. And isn't it kind of ironic that here we are, and all those years ago when that Tony Allen's National Player Program was in its infancy, and we were going to all those little outposts, and now they're. The influence of international players in the National Football League cannot be denied.
No, absolutely. It's spreading, absolutely. And, so I'm off to Detroit today. I think I'm going to interview Calvin Johnson, Matthew Stafford, Jim Caldwell, and then the Bills to wrap it up. But we'll do a little bit more longer podcast next week. Jeff, I was going to take some mailbag questions, but I'm going to try and get a couple in quickly. But there's one here that's come through from... I'm in one of those NFL bubbles, Jeff, so you'll have to excuse me. I'm literally filming or at training camp all day. I'm flying at night, getting to my hotel at like 10:30, and then straight to bed. And so I haven't seen your game, but we've got a question here from Feg Bizet, who says, Jeff must be cheesing about his onside punt touchdown yesterday. What was that all about?
Okay, one of the unique things in our game is that on a kicked ball, any kick ball, a kickoff or a punt, any player lined up behind whoever kicks the ball, the kicker or the punter, is eligible to go down and recover the ball. All right, so we played Toronto last night, and we have used this formation in the past where we shift and have three players lined up. The punter walks up to 10 yards deep behind the center, and we have three players behind him, and then into the wind, he punts the ball, just lays the ball up. And we were playing a team in Toronto that had a rookie special teams coach who was an American and a rookie returner who had never returned in the league before. And the kid let the ball drop and hit the ground, and our onside player ran down, picked it up, and ran into the end zone, and we scored a touchdown on a punt. So it's just one of the crazy things that you got to watch CFL football, because there is such – it is every game – and I've been doing it for a lot of years. Every game I look around, I go, are you kidding me? Did I just see what I thought I saw?
So you took the young guys to school, basically.
Well, it's funny because the coordinator came over to me after the game. He goes, boy, it's a hard way to learn in this league, isn't it? And I said, yep, it is. I've been down there too.
So you learn, right? You learn from your mistakes. Let's take one more, Jeff, and then we'll wrap up this week's podcast. And I can chip in a little bit on this one. Tom Marshall asks, will the top-tier offensive line in Dallas be the key to reigniting Darren McFadden's career? So first of all, I'll tell you that watching them up close, that offensive line is as good as advertised, the real deal. I talked about Tyron Smith being, in my mind, the best offensive lineman in the NFL. He's clearly the best group of offensive linemen that Dallas have there. But the day I was there, Joseph Randall was getting the bulk of the carries, and Darren McFadden was out injured, and he was walking laps around the practice field. And I thought, oh, I've seen this movie before.
Wow. I was hopeful for McFadden, because any time a guy comes out of college he's as decorated a player as he was, and has an opportunity to be a first round draft choice in the NFL, and then you saw flashes of it in Oakland, and I was hoping that maybe this would reignite his career, and you could look at the Raiders year as just playing with a bad football team, but that's concerning when he's hurt now, and one of the things you learn in the NFL, and you see it every day when you're on these practice journeys, Neil, is that it is so hyper-competitive, and you can't lose reps if you're trying to make a football team or if you're trying to become a starter on a football team, because guys fight for those reps, and if you're on the sideline walking around, limping around, you're losing reps, and when you're losing reps, you're losing opportunities, and opportunities are what are the most important thing in NFL football.
Yeah, you're right, and that's funny. They literally do fight for reps. So we were watching the sort of blocking drills in Dallas on Saturday, and one of the starters came out, and the offensive line coach shouted, "Give me a guard!" And literally, two of these rookie free agents sprinted to the line. And And the one who got there first got the rep.
And you know, that's the way it is. And for those free agents, any time that you get a chance to be on tape, any time that you get a chance to stand, you know, in front of the coach and demonstrate that you belong is critical. And there's, you know, they there's a saying in the game, you know, don't count your reps, make your reps count. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's really true. When you get your chance, you have to show.
Jeff, I just want to wrap up just by saying congratulations to Great Britain's women's team. They just, as we've been on the air recording this podcast, they just defeated Sweden in the European Championships that are taking place in Spain. They'd already beaten Germany. They're actually turning a few heads, the Great Britain's ladies team, and they've reached the finals. So congratulations to them. Another example of the sport growing in our country.
Another, exactly right. And with those as women, you know, have success on the gridiron, and those are NFL fans. Those are football fans, number one, whether they're men, women, or children, they're football fans. And I think that's great. And like you say, another sign that, you know, BAFA and everybody who is helping to grow the game in the UK is doing a great job. And go Lady Lions and bring home the gold.
Yeah, absolutely. Hear, hear. All right, Jeff, I'm off to collect some more hellos, and I'll probably get a hug from Rex Ryan that I've got to pass on to you at some point, and we'll catch up next week.
Hey, and make sure you see Bobby April Jr., the linebacker coach for the Bills, and tell him I said hello. You're going to love training camp in Buffalo. Let me tell you, I've been following it, and it is Rex, all Rex.
All right, we'll look forward to that, and I'll bring you some updates next week. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. Until next week, we'll give you a full hour next week. Until then, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.